A very happy Friday to you and yours. Merry Christmas as well. It is our final show of the year here in 2024 on Fox Sports Aberdeen, 1420 on the AM dial, 98.5 on the FM dial, and online at hubcityradio.com. That's right. We are taking a little Christmas sabbatical next week. So this is the final show of the year. So a very, very Merry Christmas to you. A very warm new year to boot. So we're going out with a blaze of glory here today on FSA. David Tewksbury joined alongside by Matt McClure. Another Matthew will be joining us as well over the phone line coming up in about 15 minutes, talking some Minnesota Vikings football. The Vikings Purple Insider, Matthew Collar, he'll be joining us here, and we'll have that discussion with the Vikings and their big game against the Seahawks coming up this weekend there from Lumen Field. David Tewksbury with Matt McClure. Happy Friday, sir. How are you?
Happy Friday. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and yours. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Doing good.
Lumen Field. Doesn't that just have zero buzz to it?
That doesn't really get me fired up.
No, it doesn't at all. And I've been a Seahawks fan for like 9 days or something like that. And
that's a newer stadium, right? Ish?
2002.
Okay, so within the last 20-something years.
Yeah, time to tear it down. They need a new stadium. That's like the new deal in the NFL nowadays, isn't it? Feels like every 20 years we got to tear down whatever we feels like just built and start anew and have a new indoor stadium that looks exactly like Allegiant Stadium and SoFi Stadium, and they all look exactly alike.
They do all look exactly the same. And by the way, there's teams that share those fields too.
Correct.
The Chargers and the Rams play at the same field.
And neither of them have a fan base. It's like, it's so weird to me how we did that in the NFL, how we moved the Rams from LA to St. Louis, and then people are like, oh, well, I guess the Rams left LA. No one seemed to notice. Nobody seemed to care. Same thing with the LA Raiders. They moved them from LA to Oakland, Oakland back to LA, now back to Oakland, back to now to Vegas. And still nobody cares. It's just like, do we, I get it. They're a huge media market.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of friends that live in California from college. None of them care about the Rams. None of them care about the Raiders and the Chargers now. Just nobody cares out there. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And that's when you get Philly and teams like Philly and Pittsburgh that play in LA and Vegas. They just take over the stadium. It's crazy. I was watching a Steelers-Raiders game earlier this year in Vegas. The amount of terrible towels you see, it's crazy. Where's the Raiders fans at?
In Oakland. That's where they're at. They're in Oakland. They're not there anymore. So, yeah, kind of interesting how that all works out. But you know what? There were a lot of go Pack go chants in the Emerald City this last weekend. Will the Vikings invade Lumen Field this upcoming Sunday and their fan base? We'll see. But should be a good matchup between the Seahawks and Vikings, and we'll talk about that coming up here in the next 10 minutes with Matthew Collar, the Vikings Purple Insider. Looking forward to that discussion there with him. Not a whole lot of action from last night on the high school hardwood. There were a lot of matchups that were postponed due to the weather, and we've got a couple of these that actually already have makeup dates announced. Not a whole lot of them, but most of them just a good old-fashioned PPD. So we'll talk about that here, and also some college action from last night within the NSIC, and also a couple of upsets once again. And, you know, it's just one of those situations where sports season rolls around and us broadcasters have a lot of bloviating to do. All right, he's Matt McClure. We call him nothing other than
Mr. Unlimited.
Who am I kidding? We call him the Cobra as well. And like I mentioned, final show of the year here in 2024. Matt, should we do it?
Yeah, we should do it.
I think we should do it. All right, it is time to do this very, very important public service announcement. It is something that always grinds my gears. It fires me up. It gets me all hot and bothered. The old postponement and cancellation. And we get these emails sent to us from the folks that are coaches and athletic directors and media members alike. I'm just going to throw out a random game here. Millbank and Clark Willow Lake, that was postponed there yesterday. Okay, that's postponed to a later date. Now, I'm not throwing Millbank or Clark Willow Lake under the bus or anything like that, but let's just say for the sake of this discussion, the athletic director out at Millbank says, hey, that matchup's been canceled. We'll try to make it up next week. That's not the way it is.
No.
You have postponed it to next week. Canceled means you're not going to play it again.
Yes.
So I feel like we have to do this every year. It's like our yearly public service announcement. There is a big difference between canceled and postponed. Would you like to walk us through, the listener through, just in case people are having a hard time comprehending this sort of thing?
Yeah, postponed, pretty simple. If you're trying to make up the game at a later date, that means postponed. You're moving it to a different date. Example was Ipswich moved their game. I mean, or let's stay with the Milbank Clark Willow Lake.
Let's not confuse our listeners now, Matthew.
Yeah, I'm already confusing people. If Milbank's athletic director was like, hey, we got a date, let's move it February 7th. Postponed due to weather, it's been moved to February 7th. Not canceled, moved to February 7th. Because to your point, Tukes, if it's canceled, you're not playing the game. You're not playing the game. And what happened to me when I was playing CYO basketball in high school, we were in the state in the semifinals, the game was canceled, and we were in the playoffs. They just canceled the game, which is weak. But it was CYO basketball. Who cares? We cared. But they moved the game. They didn't move the game. It was canceled, and the higher seed moved on. Kind of weak.
What?
Very weak, yeah. So weak. We were on a nice little run in the playoffs and CYO basketball my senior year of high school.
Uh-huh.
And we won a couple games, and then they just ran out of gym time, I guess, and they canceled the game, and we got eliminated.
What?
Because we were the last seed to make the playoffs.
That's a bunch of bunk.
Yeah, but that's the difference between post. If they would have said, hey, that game's postponed to a later date, we would have played. It was canceled, we didn't play the game, and we got eliminated.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah, big difference. Big difference between canceled and postponed. So Ryan Schooler, athletic director over there at Milbank, we're just kind of throwing him a bone here or two and just utilizing that Bulldog squad just for the sake of argument.
I will say, I was putting the sports together last night, Tukes. A lot of good stuff with the postpone. Everyone that I checked didn't see one canceled.
I like that.
So we're getting on the right track, I will say.
See, people always say, yeah, these guys in the radio, they just flap their gums and bloviate. Are they actually adding anything to the discussion? If nothing else, after our time is done and we are buried 6 feet deep, that must be, or might be, our greatest contributions to the sports broadcasting realm here in the state of South Dakota. Those two guys in the sports hub, yeah, they were all right. They talked about postponed and cancellation. They actually taught us the difference between the two. I think that's our greatest contribution to this area.
I agree. And I was very impressed with the Facebook pages, the people that were posting the postponements and things, that they got it right. I was going to mess with you a little bit, put canceled on there, LOL.
Ah,
I should have done that.
You should have. You should have done that. Appreciate you doing the sports there last night as the wife and I were getting our Christmas started anyway, as she was traveling there this last Thursday. So taking one for the team. I appreciate that. That's a very, very kind gesture of you. Okay, so let's go ahead and get to some more other interesting notes. So yesterday on the sports set, we had Ryan Deal on the program.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about a guy by the name of Marvin Richard III. So Marvin Richard III just absolutely went off on Wednesday, and we're like, wow, 43 points. Keep an eye on this guy. As I think it was Pine Ridge over TZ, 123.
Yep.
Is that just, wow, he caught lightning in a bottle. What a game he had. And he was just hitting everything. You know, everybody can have a good game from time to time. Some guy drops in 50. Great. Some guy drops in 39. Great game. Can you back it up? Can you back it up? Can you back it up? Marvin Richard III yesterday for Pine Ridge, 57 points.
What?
In a game yesterday. That is a LNI record. 57 points, a 50-burger for Marvin Richard III there for Pine Ridge. I think he has put us broadcasters, us media folk, on notice. This guy can fill it up. My goodness.
Yeah, and that's a team right there in Class A you're going to have to keep an eye on for sure. I mean, I know they've made the state tournament before, and this guy, I got to see him play. That's the bottom line. I'm happy he's a junior. Maybe I can get out west and see him play a game or two, because this kid is something special. Back up a 43-point game, yeah, I'll do you one better. How about a 57-piece? And I'll tell you what that tells me is he can get to any spot on the floor he wants, and he can shoot probably anywhere he wants to. He's probably got a lot of freedom in that offense. He's probably a great free throw shooter, jump shooter, and three-point guy. That's an incredible stat right there, the last two games. That's what, over, is that 100 points on the dot?
Yeah, exactly.
How about that?
Literally, can he be the new Wilt Chamberlain, just having that photo of 100 and just put two games?
I think he should do something like that. He should definitely have the 57 on paper. I mean, that's a new NLII.
Yeah.
Why not?
Very, very impressive. So big shout out to none other than Marvin Richard III. And again, thanks to Ryan Deal for joining us yesterday. Now, we're seeing more and more of these stories, Matt, about Division I teams going down either against a D2. We saw that with Green Bay and Michigan Tech the other day. You know, Doug Gottlieb is being absolutely flamed on social media for that one. And yesterday, you have another D1 that went down yesterday. This time, it's the Rice squad. Rice, going into yesterday, was 8-3. Now, they lost yesterday to a NAIA squad, UNT Dallas, 69-68. And I think it's interesting because we see these stories all the time, and these D1 squads, they get kind of lambasted and lit into by social media, Twitter, X, Facebook, whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, and I quote tweeted this yesterday, and I think we've talked about this before, that massive chasm from D1 to D2 or NAIA or even mid-major, that chasm is no longer the Grand Canyon. It's still big, but it's like this now. Now, before, it was like this. Why? Name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, guys that are going D2 that are probably former D1 athletes, they go to the portal, they go to a lower level, and guess what? Those teams are instant contenders. There's still a gap, okay? There is still a gap, but there's not this massive Grand Canyon between NAIA and D2 or mid-major, what have you.
I've changed my thought process on this. I remember we were talking about that last year, and I thought the gap was so wide. And now that I've kind of seen how the transfer portal works a little bit and how guys, like you say, play a lower level to get more playing time or have more success and things of that nature, I've changed my thinking on it. And I agree with you. I think that gap has closed down a little bit. Like you said, there is still a difference, but I think the athletes are kind of similar. You can have a guy in an NAIA school or Division II school that's just a baller, a bucket getter. And those kinds of guys can maybe have you upset a team or keep you into the game. Like, you know, even an example was North Dakota versus Alabama. There's a gap there, but it's not as big as you think, and that's why we see some of these games go down to the wire, because you have some great individual performance. There was a guy on North Dakota in that game who dropped 40 against Alabama.
Sixth-ranked team in the country.
Yeah. So I've had a completely different thought process on this over the last year, just because, you know, I've seen more about the transfer portal now. I didn't know much about it. And now that I've seen it here this past year, I've had a complete change of thought on it, and I agree with you.
And I was just thinking about this. I was dropping my dog off at home before I came into the studio here for the Hub after my morning show over on Point. This was pre-transfer portal. Northern State played Arizona State not that long ago. It was in the 2017 season. This is when NSU went to the Division II National Championship down south in Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. They played ASU in an exhibition affair, and they lost 98-90 in double overtime.
Wow.
And that's one of the reasons why you see a lot of these D1 teams that are kind of reticent to schedule Northern State. Because, oh, boy, they went on the road. They went down to Arizona. They played ASU to a double overtime game. Oh, we don't want to be shown up by a D2. And, you know, I feel like nowadays you start to see these games continue to be scheduled from the NAIA to D1. You know, when I was doing presentation, we played SDSU all the time and USD and UND. And more often than not, they were pretty lopsided. But that gap has really very much shrunk.
I think it has in basketball. I think it's still pretty big in football, considering the fact that if you play a team that has – these bullies on the offensive and defensive line, it's a little bit tough. That's why you see a massive reaction when a team like App State beat Michigan all those years ago. It's just, you got talent on the weapons side. I feel like you got pretty good receivers and good skill position players, but it's the guys in the trenches more so in football that's the big difference. You see a 6'5 guy, 315. I'm not saying that there isn't guys in Division II that are that big, but it's just a little bit different. But in basketball, which we're talking about now, it is a little bit different. In my eye.
Spot on. Spot on assessment for sure. We're talking some Vikings football coming up next. Matthew Collar, he'll be joining us on the phone line talking Vikings and Seahawks for this upcoming Sunday and the Vikings season at large. Sports Hub continues on Fox Sports Aberdeen, 1420 AM, 98.5 on the FM dial, and online at hubcityradio.com. Live streaming with the video as well on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Fox Sports Aberdeen. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and yours. He is Matt McClure. I'm David Tewksbury. Another Matthew joining us here on the phone line, Matthew Collar of the Purple Insider, Vikings Purple Insider here on FSA. Matthew, good to talk with you this morning. How are you, sir?
I am good. I'm good. You know, didn't expect to necessarily be in this position. Thought I might be looking at mock drafts at this point, but here we are.
It's a beautiful thing. You know, that's the one thing about the NFL is you just have no idea. And coming mid to late December, like you say, you're thinking, ah, boy, we're going to be thinking about maybe a new guard or a new linebacker. Insert your favorite position of need here. And you know what? The Vikings, they just need to get healthy here a little bit from their offensive line perspective, a couple guys going down. But, you know, by and large, they've had a phenomenal season, to be sure. And that's actually a great spot to start. You didn't see any of this coming. To what do you attribute the incredible success to here in 24?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I expected it to be better than some of the outside world, because I don't think that the Vegas line setters knew who Andrew Van Ginkel was, but I did. So I thought, you know, they've got some players on the defensive side that they picked up that I thought would make them a lot better, because I knew what Brian Flores could do with a very mediocre roster last year and put together a good defense. So when they added guys like Andrew Van Ginkel and Blake Cashman and Jonathan Grenard and Stephon Gilmore, I was like, okay, this could be a team that wins some games with defense. And then after watching training camp, Sam Darnold and Justin Jefferson really had a great connection. And Sam Darnold has one of the best arms that I've ever seen in my life. And so when you watch that in training camp over and over, him throwing to the greatest receiver on earth, you go, you know what? I don't know if they're going to win six games, guys. Like, I think that these two are going to come up with something. So I had projected them before the season to make the 7 seed in the wild card and be above the Bears, because they're the Bears, and, you know, maybe be a step behind the top contenders. But then, you know, when you look around the league and you look at some of the coaching struggles, the ownership struggles where owners are basing decisions on Madden scores and things like that, you think, well, now I understand why Kevin O'Connell's been able to do this. I think the Vikings probably have one of the 5 best coaches in the NFL, and Kevin O'Connell has done just an incredible, incredible job of getting this team on the same page from day one with the offense, and then maximizing every bit of Sam Darnold's skill set, instilling confidence in him, getting open wide receivers for him. I think really playing to his strengths by pushing the ball down the field. There was so much discussion about, oh, the NFL is a lot of short passes and so forth these days, but O'Connell understood you can't just live on short passes when Sam Darnold is your quarterback. So their downfield concepts have been extremely, extremely effective. The defense is kind of what we thought it would be, or maybe even a little bit better. And also, there's a lot of really bad football teams in the league. And when you look at the Vikings schedule, I don't think it's been leaning horribly toward the bad teams, but look at any of the good teams' schedule where you go, okay, they beat the entire AFC South. So that's great, you know, took care of business there. And then suddenly you're looking up and winning 4 or 5 games against decent teams and you have 12 wins. That's kind of, I think, the story of the entire NFC this year, is that 3 teams have just beaten all these teams that are far inferior to them and are kind of sitting above everybody else.
Couldn't agree more. And I got to give it to you there, Matthew. We both picked the Bears, me and Tukes, to maybe make the playoffs. I'm glad you didn't do that, because they're awful. But I want to ask you, what do you think the bigger surprise is? The defense, or do you think it's Sam Darnold and this offense? You kind of talked a little bit about it. It sounds to me that you thought this defense was going to be pretty good. But, I mean, did you see this coming with that unit?
Yeah, I thought this defense would be somewhere in the top 10 range, if not a little bit better. I mean, we had joint practices, and now this seems funnier to say, with Cleveland, where we didn't know Cleveland was going to be, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. But the Vikings defense was so dominant in their joint practices against Cleveland. I remember doing a podcast with another reporter who made the trip, and we were just talking about, like, this team could make the playoffs if they rank 20th in offense because this defense is so stacked as long as they stay healthy. And then they really have stayed healthy, which is a huge thing, right? Detroit's defense is maimed, but the Vikings have only had some dings and cuts here or there. They're getting Stephon Gilmore back this week. They've missed one of their linebackers, Ivan Pace Jr., the last few weeks, but that's it. They've had everybody stay healthy. So that's always a major factor. If they had had three or four more injuries, I could have been completely wrong about that, depending on what players there were. The offense was always, I thought it was going to be very boom or bust. I thought it was going to be like a slightly less crazed version of a Jameis Winston offense, where Sam Darnold throws 30 touchdowns and maybe 22 picks, and some weeks we just can't believe how bad he is, and some weeks we can't believe how good he is. And that happened in Jacksonville a few weeks ago where he threw three interceptions, but then that actually turned out to be a turning point in the entire season, because after Darnold threw three interceptions, they went back to the drawing board and looked really closely at everything concept-wise that was working for him. What was he seeing? Him and Kevin O'Connell sat down and went through all of it, and he's really been a different quarterback since then. He's thrown one interception, and it was a very understandable interception, not really anything he did wrong since then. And I think that he understood that he doesn't have to try to force things with this offense. And I think coming up in the league with such horrendous organizations, horrendous coaches, that he got into habits of, well, you know, I'm going to have to figure this out myself and scramble around like crazy and throw into tight windows, do all this stuff. But with the Vikings, sometimes you could just check it down to Aaron Jones and he converts a third and long because he's Aaron Jones and he's that good at football. And the same thing goes for TJ Hockenson, or, you know, sometimes you could just throw it up to Jordan Addison and he'll go make a play. And I think simplifying things like that for Sam Darnold has been the reason for their success. But I don't think any of us thought he would be in the top 5 to 7 quarterbacks in the NFL. I thought, you know, maybe Sam Darnold ends up like 20th or something. But, you know, I knew some people from Carolina that were there when he was there, and what they told me was that everybody liked him there, and they thought it was Matt Rule's fault. So I was like, well, maybe this will work out. But I didn't, of course, nobody thought it was going to work out to this extent.
Congratulations, you've just explained the exact career arc of Geno Smith. It's literally the exact same thing, to a certain degree. But we're talking with Matthew Coller here on Fox Sports Aberdeen. My question now is, it's kind of like, is it the chicken or the egg? Are you willing to pay Sam Darnold $60 million next year when you know you've got a quarterback on his rookie deal, certainly unproven, coming off of a knee injury? Is it that Sam Darnold is this good, or is he basically the product of an incredible offensive mind in Kevin O'Connell? I mean, look at Kirk Cousins this year and what he has done with the Atlanta Falcons. Now he's finding his way on the pine. He's on the bench now. Now, granted, he's coming off of an Achilles. It's a little bit different. He's a little bit younger, a lot older, I should say, than Sam Darnold is. But are the Vikings and their upper brass, are you as a insider, podcaster, whatever you want to call it, blogger, whatever, media member, are you willing to say, okay, let's go ahead and give this guy $55, $60 million a year?
Yeah, so I think that they have options that don't have them doing that. One of them is the franchise tag, where they can franchise tag Sam Darnold, and I don't know exactly what it would be this year, but I think it's probably in the $40 to $45 million range. And they could just adjust the way that they're using their salary cap space when it comes to free agency to maybe spend a little less, or maybe just set up contracts that go out into the future to try to continue to build for a window around Sam Darnold and then push this decision down the road. The other thing that they could do is they could sign him to somewhat of a Baker Mayfield or Geno Smith type of contract where it's 3 years, but it's really more like 2 years, and the team could get out after one because they have their franchise tag in the back pocket. They can always negotiate a deal with Darnold to say, we could just tag you. And that's a really important element of this. I think that it's just a little bit overstated when it comes to paying Sam Darnold, like what it would do to the entire team, because when you look around, at all the NFC teams that are in the playoffs, except for Washington, every single one of them has a quarterback on a second contract. The Philadelphia Eagles do, the Packers do, the Lions, the Rams, the Bucks, all these teams have paid a quarterback. And I think we got into a mode for a little while there, especially when someone like Kirk got paid, of just saying, you just can't do it. You just can't pay someone. Well, you can if you're good at your job and if your organization is good and if you already have foundational talent. That's the thing. The Vikings have the best receiver in the league, top five tight end, top five left tackle, top five right tackle, top five pass rusher in Jonathan Grenard, top 10 linebacker in Blake Cashman. It's not like they have to find those things after already paying a quarterback. They already have them. So I think all of that is pretty important. They're actually spending $40 million this year on the salary cap because 28 of it is dead cap to Kirk Cousins. The reason paying Kirk Cousins hurt them was because he's not that good. And that's really the reason. He's okay, but he was never playing at the level of Sam Darnold. And Sam Darnold being 27 and having that arm and that physical talent that could push you over the top when things go wrong, I think that's a guy you at least want to take another shot at before just turning it over to someone who has never played in the NFL before.
Matthew, how important do you think it is for the Vikings to win this division and try to get this, you know, one or two seed in the NFC? I feel like they play a lot better at home. I just feel like it's the ultimate home field advantage. Not saying that if they had to play on the road, they couldn't win, but I feel like home field and the matchups at home would be huge for them if they can somehow beat the Lions and ultimately win this division.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because U.S. Bank Stadium is an enormous advantage for Brian Flores' defense. A lot of it is based on confusion, and if you saw Caleb Williams the other night, that was one confused guy. Now, I know they wouldn't do that to some of the playoff quarterbacks, but still, it makes it a lot easier with the noise for confusion on the offensive side, and they have to make a lot of adjustments and things like that based on what they see, so it's a huge help. The other thing is that I don't love the matchups if the Vikings don't win the division. I mean, the Tampa Bay Bucs are playing really good football right now. They have a quarterback who beat them last year in Baker Mayfield. They've got a really stout defensive line, which I think the Vikings can struggle with at times. And, I mean, Tampa won a home playoff game against Philadelphia last year. So they're pretty dangerous. And then L.A. beat the Vikings earlier this year. It was the Vikings' worst game of the season when they played against L.A. So if they had to go out to Los Angeles, I don't love that for them. And maybe, Rams fans would actually buy the tickets for a playoff game, I think. So, I think that if you're talking about winning the NFC North and ending up with facing the seven seed or winning the entire conference, and then you get the week off, that advantage is just astronomical. I mean, it's hard. It's going to be hard to win these three games in a row: Seattle, Green Bay, and then Detroit. I think they probably have the toughest road of any team to the end of this, versus Philadelphia or versus the Detroit Lions. So it won't be easy, but if they pull it off, well, that is some kind of football season right there. 15-2, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't think anybody had that pegged before the season started, certainly. Maybe one or two more here with Matthew Collar on Fox Sports Aberdeen. I just may push back a little bit with the Rams. I'm not worried about the Rams, to be honest with you, because they are so fickle. You could be, I guess, worried about them in some senses, but Matthew Stafford has not looked very good this season. That's a team that's still dinged up a little bit. When they lost to the Seahawks, when they beat the Seahawks before the bye for Seattle, they had seven drives straight, three and out, 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 seven straight three and outs in that game. I think that's happened to Sean McVay maybe once or twice before. So I know they beat the Bills. They looked really good in that game. Then they come on back and they play the 49ers on that Thursday night, granted with sloppy weather, but Stafford had to be he was almost picked off three times. Guys dropped the ball. There's something about the Rams. I'm just not a believer in them. I think they're good, but not great, but they are dangerous. They've got a kind of sort of a championship pedigree, but to your point, time will tell, and we'll figure out what the matchup looks like. Matchup this Sunday is Lumen Field playing host to the Seahawks and the Vikings game there. How do you handicap that one and unpack that one?
Yeah, this is one where I've been wondering, did the Vikings just lose a game because that's the NFL, right? Like, they've won 7 in a row. It's kind of hard to make it 8. You know, when it comes to Seattle, they've got some of the formula that has given the Vikings the most trouble this year. The defensive line, specifically Leonard Williams, is such a beast. And the Vikings' interior offensive line can be a little shaky when they're facing players of his caliber. That's a concern. Also, Geno Smith, it looks like he's fine, and he is a good quarterback. And, you know, I think that that offense, it seems, in Seattle has been a little bit shaky at times throughout this season. But when you got a guy with that arm and those receivers, Jaxon Smith-Njigba's, you know, elevated his name this year, especially on underneath stuff. So, you know, I mean, that's been a little tough when the Vikings have faced quality veteran quarterbacks who know how to pick apart some of their defensive confusion. I think that Geno Smith is capable of that. I think the Vikings are the better team than Seattle, but you're going out there. They last played on Monday Night Football. The Vikings are a tad banged up going into it. So it feels to me like this one is maybe a little bit closer than the games in recent weeks where I've been able to pretty easily pick the Vikings.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matthew. I think this is going to be a close game considering Seattle. They didn't play all that well versus Green Bay. And Matthew, I also think that a big key for the Vikings, especially on the defensive side, is that red zone defense. It seems like the Seattle Seahawks, they can move the ball in between the 20s, no problem. When they get down there at the goal in the red area, that's when Geno Smith throws into triple coverage, an interception, or something like that. So if they can maybe force a red zone turnover and make Geno make mistakes down there, they can handle this team. What do you think about that?
No, yeah, I think that that's really the thing as far as the Vikings defense is that they have been extremely, extremely good at causing turnovers. And, you know, some people act like that's totally random. It's not. Like, when you have a lot of playmakers and a defense that is focused on causing big mistakes, the one thing that teams have been able to do that have good quarterbacks is extend drives and stay on the field for a long period of time and then wear out the Vikings defense by the end. But a few times this year, they've been able to even bail themselves out against Atlanta, against Arizona, by just causing turnovers. They have one of the league leaders in interceptions in Byron Murphy Jr. They got a strip sack last week from Jonathan Bernard, which is not a random event either. And this offensive line from Seattle is a little bit patchwork. So I think there's an opportunity there for a strip sack, for an interception, whatever it might be, to change the game. And that's probably what it comes down to. It's that, you know, Seattle's got defensive playmakers that can cause turnovers, and so do the Vikings. I mean, I honestly think it's a very good matchup between two teams that have a ton of talent and also a ton that is on the line here. So I'm excited to be going.
4 interceptions in the red zone for both of these quarterbacks.
Oh.
Sam Darnold has 4 red zone picks. Geno Smith has 4 red zone picks. So I'm not a betting man, but if I am, I'm putting some money line on someone's throwing a pick inside the 20-yard line on Sunday. So we'll see how it all plays out. Appreciate you taking some time here, Matthew. Safe travels out there to Seattle and Lumen Field. Enjoy the game. Should be a good one. And, again, thanks for being a part of the program today. We appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. Our pleasure, for sure. Matthew Coller here on Fox Sports Aberdeen. And Geno Smith, Sam Darnold, 2 good quarterbacks. Are they great? I think you've got a better chance. You can make a better argument, I think, for Darnold. He's certainly been great this year. Geno Smith has been kind of feast or famine.
He's a roller coaster.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He tries to do a little bit too much, and typically when that's the problem, it's because you don't have a running game. And the Seahawks haven't had a running game for the entire season. We didn't talk about it with Matthew, but Ryan Grubb, as an offensive coordinator, wants to fill the air with footballs. Throw it to DK. Throw it to Tyler Lockett. Throw it to Fant. Throw it to JSN. Throw it to Kenneth Walker out of the backfield. That's not what works in the NFL. At some point in time, you have to have some semblance of a running game. You don't have to be 50-50, but you have to have some sort of balance. And Zach Charbonnet, last week against the Packers, 8 carries. 8! He was averaging, I think, 8.5 yards per carry. Ah, we got to throw it. We got to throw it into triple coverage. What are we doing?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Tukes, because when Seattle was on that little win streak there where they were playing really good, especially toward they had that little bump in the road after the 3-0 start, that second half, I felt like they were running the ball pretty well.
Look what they did against Arizona.
I was just going to mention the Arizona game. So it's just kind of weird how they just say, hey, Geno, drop back and see if you can lead us down the field. Now, as Geno He was coming off that injury there against Green Bay. My guess is
he's going
to play. So I don't know. This matchup is interesting. I think Seattle's going to keep this close. I think this is going to be one of the better games this weekend because Seattle, they got a bad taste with that hideous performance versus Green Bay. They're going to be ready to go. And I think the Vikings, as Matthew mentioned there, they've won 7 in a row. This could be one of those games where they just don't have it. Short week on a Monday night versus Chicago. I kind of am leaning towards Seattle in this game, but I think it's going to be close.
It means more in terms of desperation for the Seahawks. This is a gotta-have-it kind of game for them. The Vikings are already in the playoffs. They locked up a postseason berth last week. So this means a lot, especially with strength of victory for the Seahawks as well, because if they lose to the Vikings and beat the Bears, you still basically need the Rams to lose another one of their final three games outside of playing them in Week 18. So there's probably more sense of urgency for Seattle in this matchup. But, oh, by the way, the Vikings are, like Matthew said, very good. We'll have to wait and see how it all plays out. Looking forward to it on Sunday. I'm glad it's on Sunday afternoon, not Sunday night, because the Seahawks can't play in primetime this year for one reason or another at 0-3. Coming up next on the show, we're talking some high school news and notes on FSA. Sports Hub continues on FSA, final episode of 2024. We'll be back at it in the new year. Once again, friendly reminder that Northern State has their Sideliners Luncheon Series today at 12 noon. So if you're thinking about lunch, how do I do for lunch today? Swing on by Buffalo Wild Wings today at 12 noon for the Sideliners Luncheon Series here from head coaches and players alike, getting primed up for their matchups this weekend against Crookston and Minot State. He's Matt McClure. I'm David Tewksbury. Thanks again for joining us on this finally Friday. Lots of matchups yesterday were postponed. Check out our website for more details with our sports broadcasting scoreboard from last night. A couple of matchups did get underway and finish up there. Aberdeen Christian taking on Loyola Frederick. We had Coach Rohrbach on yesterday, and he was saying, I think this one's probably going to happen. And indeed it did, that doubleheader at the Aberdeen Civic Arena. On the girls' side of things, Jill Elwine pours in 22 as Loyola Frederick beats Aberdeen Christian 38-19, and also it would be Potter County over Highmore Herald 55-50. Other matchups were all postponed. Again, check out our website for more details. Aberdeen Christian is taking on Redfield tomorrow. That'll be a web stream at 1 o'clock from the Roncalli Gym, part of that Cavalier Clash. And those are two teams trying to find their way a little bit, a couple of young squads, and sometimes those are really, really fun games. And two teams that are kind of hungry for a victory, Aberdeen Christian against Redfield, on paper you're like, two teams that they're not going to go to the state tournament this year. But two teams that are trying to kind of find their way, those are really fun games typically.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Christian girls, they played a little bit better there last night, and they competed a little bit, and, you know, you see – the first game they played, they struggled to score. You increased that with 19 points there yesterday. I thought they played, you know, they struggled in the second half, but overall competed pretty well. And to your point, these are two teams going in tomorrow that want to taste victory. And I think you could see a really fun low-scoring game there tomorrow.
Progress, not perfection, with Aberdeen Christian for sure. On the boys' side of things, Warner, they would just get past Aberdeen Roncalli. I was driving back into town listening to this one over on Pheasant Country 103, and Roncalli just could not quite get over the hump as the Cavaliers, they fall 47-46, low-scoring defensive affair. Warner led by three at halftime, and Roncalli just could not quite get the job done. I think they were 9 out of 14 from the free throw line. 5 missed free throws in a game in which you lose by 1. You look back at that and say, God, doggone it. But it is what it is. A nice defensive performance by both teams. Warner comes up with a block shot on the final play of the game. Josiah Baum, a Baker's dozen there for him. Brennan Wolf Donut with 13 points. Drew Bakeberg, 11. So you've got three players combining for 37 points there of the 47. You'll take that. Roncalli got 11 from Sam Franks, just not quite enough as Warner comes away with a one-point win.
Yeah, it just sounds to me that Roncalli couldn't buy a bucket when they desperately needed it. You mentioned the free throws. Got to shoot a little bit better from the line. That one's definitely got a sting if you're Roncalli. You play great defense. When you give up 47 points in a game, you feel pretty good. They were right in the game, had a chance there to win it at the end. Give credit to Warner with that defense down the stretch. But it just seems to me that Coach Gallagher's crew couldn't buy a bucket when they desperately needed it, and it dug them in there last night.
And listening to the postgame show there as well, and even on the final play of the game, Coach Gallagher, he even said as much. He's kind of kicking himself because on the final play of the game, I believe it was Aiden Fisher that had the ball with about 7 seconds to go, and you get into this situation where do we let our guys play it out or do I take the timeout? And Coach Gallagher took the timeout in the middle of the drive with Aiden Fisher driving to the lane. He finished with a layup, but the timeout had already been called.
Yeah.
So it's one of those situations where it's like, do I freeze the kicker or do I let him kick the field goal? It's just one of those things, and I think he's probably kicking himself, but that's sports. We can Monday morning quarterback it or Friday morning quarterback in this case, but I think that program is going to be fine. Their defense is really clicking.
Yeah, their defense is good. They just got to figure out the roles for these guys offensively. He probably is kicking himself because it's kind of weird how that kind of went down, though, because usually you see the player kind of slow roll the ball up the court. He must have been in go mode in that spot. But, yeah, they're going to be fine. It's early on in the season, but the offense has got to get going a little bit.
All right. Elsewhere, you had Loyola Frederick defeat Aberdeen Christian 77-68. Noah Kipley coming back from that injury against Warner as he drops in 24 points as Luke Kaiser had 19 for the Knights in the shortcoming. Jet Johnson and Ellis Russell both with a Baker's dozen each. Gavin Nicholson chipping in 14. Weston Thorpe with 11. High-scoring game, 77-68 as Loyola Frederick comes away with a victory. Would not be shocked to see either of those teams in Aberdeen in the Barnett Center here in the not. And well, that is the distant future, about 3.5 months or so away from right now, but two really good teams.
Yeah, and I think if you get in a track meet with Loyola Frederick, there's only a handful of teams that can keep pace, and I think you're in trouble if you do. And 77 points is a lot. They have a lot of scorers on that team, and Gavin Nicholson down the stretch really took that game over. Really nice win for Loyola Frederick, but if you get in a track meet with that team, you're going to be in trouble. They got athletes all over the place.
Literally track and field athletes.
Yes.
So they don't lose those track meets very much. So big shout out to them for sure. Nice win for the Titans in the victory there for Loyola Frederick, 77-68. And also of note, you had Falkton defeat Harriet Selby on the road, 56-39. High school wrestling, check it all out on our website, hubcityradio.com. NSIC hoops from last night, it's all there on hubcityradio.com. NSU hoops tonight, we'll unpack that matchup against the likes of Minnesota Crookston. Aberdeen Central is also at home tonight as well for the girls. They'll take on Spearfish. We'll talk about that and more after this. Final episode of the Sports Hub for 2024. We'll be back in the new year. So I want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Northern State, they are back at home tonight, taking on Minnesota Crookston on the ladies' front at 5:30, gentlemen front at 7:30. Both of these squads coming into this one for women's basketball at 2-2. This was the game in which Northern State fell to Crookston last year. Now, that was in Crookston. The Wolves got their revenge back at home, but that was just before the Christmas break, and the Wolves just could not quite get anything going there, falling in that contest. And the Wolves, of course, got them back in the Hub City when they played in, I think it was either late January, early February of this year, technically this last season, but this year. But I will tell you what, that's a good matchup on paper. Emma Miller, that 5'1" guard that just throws
She's
up.
Incredible.
It's incredible the way that she throws up the most unorthodox shots, and somehow they fall. She's averaging 22 points per game right now. Wolves got to slow her down tonight.
Yeah, you got to, I mean, slow her down. You just got to make it tough for her. That's the big thing, because she's going to get hers. I mean, that's the bottom line. But you got to make it tough for her. I think Northern's got the athletes. We had Morgan Fiedler in here Wednesday during a Wolves midweek, and she's going to have a challenge guarding her. You know, she's got the quickness, the side-to-side quickness. But I agree with you, too, because it's going to have to slow her down or just make her life tough out there tonight.
And the Wolves clearly have a massive height advantage overall with this Crookston squad. So putbacks and ones, finish around the basket, that's a big key tonight.
And don't get in foul trouble. I think that's something that you got to use your size as an advantage in this game. Use it. Don't get too quick fouls and have to go to the bench and go small.
Bingo. As for the men, they'll be taking on that Crookston squad at 7:30. Crookston trying to find their way as well in the very early stages. Two teams that realistically very much mirror each other in a lot of ways. Could be a good matchup there, too. Central girls are at home tonight taking on Spearfish at 7 o'clock. What are you looking for?
That rematch of the Sodak 16 from a year ago at Spearfish. Teams experienced and looking for head coach Peyton Burkhardt here. First games at home.
All right, so should be a great atmosphere there. Merry Christmas to you and yours. We'll see you in 24.